Presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Last night's Super Bowl left me with two questions, and I think they're relevant for Georgia. And in a couple of minutes, I want to get into both of them. We'll do that here on Dog Nation Daily. Before that, obviously, when you have a big event like the Super Bowl, it has a tendency to almost, you know, suck the life out of every other story, and every other potential piece of news gets almost swallowed up by the attention paid to the Super Bowl. So I want to make sure we start with what else was going on this weekend, recruiting as we head towards National Signing Day on Wednesday. If you were not paying attention to that enough this weekend because you were looking to the big game on Sunday, let me give you an idea of a few of the things that happened. I think this is potentially, in some cases, pretty interesting for UGA. We will deal with that, and then I'll get to the Super Bowl storyline involving UGA in just a moment. First of all, I couldn't help but notice on Friday it was 4-star wide receiver, current Ole Miss commit, Jonathan Mingo, tweeted out a pushpin. I think we have that, a pushpin of himself in Athens, Georgia. So here we are in this final weekend before National Signing Day. Georgia obviously busy entertaining a guy that's a pretty impressive prospect, committed to an SEC school. That's an in-state situation for him at Ole Miss, so there's a geographic tie for the Rebels, but nonetheless, Georgia gets a chance to host Jonathan Mingo. Now, you can debate for yourself for a moment. If Georgia's hosting Mingo, what does that mean for George Pickens? I don't know. That's obviously a pretty complicated situation, as we've chronicled. What does that mean for Lawrence Cager, who I guess was also on campus this weekend, too? At least that was the expectation was going to be, that the Miami transfer was going to be in town. Does Georgia favor the transfer route? Does it favor the high school 4-star prospect? Which one do you want? Different people are going to have different opinions when it comes to this. I was saying before the show began to Connor Riley, Michael Carvell, our producers, that if you gave me the choice of, do you take the graduate transfer who's put up some stats? Do you take the 4-star high school guy? I think for what Georgia needs right now, my preference would be more along the lines of Cager. My preference would be more along the lines of a guy that's put up some stats in big-time college football. That would just be my preference for Georgia right now. Doesn't mean that I don't like Mingo. Doesn't mean that I wouldn't like to see Georgia do that. But I'm also keeping in mind that there is a good bit of wide receiver depth in the class of 2020. If you're looking for that game-changing prospect signed out of high school, it may be better that you get that guy in 2020 than in 2019 right now. But nonetheless, it was certainly interesting that Georgia hosted Mingo. Because the one thing that I keep getting a lot of comments from you all to me on social media about is the conversation that we've been having here now for quite some time about Georgia's need to upgrade the wide receiver position. Georgia's need to make wide receiver look like a destination. Obviously, we've already seen some 2020 guys seemingly question Georgia as a destination there in that regard. In some cases, prospects have just flat out chosen another school. Obviously, Georgia missed out on Jaden Hazelwood for the class of 2019. That's a pretty big miss when you're talking about an in-state wide receiver and, you know, George Pickens, whatever may still happen with that. From that standpoint, getting Mingo on campus was at least a step in the right direction there in that regard. And what my hope is on all of this is that eventually guys at that position, whether it be Mingo or Cager or Pickens or Hazelwood or Jermaine Burton for the 2020 class or anybody else, my hope is they really will buy into and listen to what A.J. Green, the great former 5-star wide receiver, who didn't play for Kirby Smart, who didn't play for this coaching staff, that's for sure, but as a fan of the Georgia Bulldogs, and obviously a guy that was a part of this program at one point in time, when we had him on the show on Friday, he said, you know, no matter how much Georgia may runs the football, no matter how much Georgia may be building itself around this big offensive lineman, this can still be a place where wide receivers can take advantage of that opportunity in the offense, because you're going to get some one-on-one opportunities. In fact, here's what A.J. Green said about that on Friday. And my hope is, whether you're talking about, you know, late additions to the 2019 class, graduate transfers, elite prospects for the 2020 class, one way or another, Georgia needs more of these receivers. Mingo might be a name to consider there, but hopefully all these guys consider what A.J. Green said on Friday. Here's a reminder.
Oh, of course, yeah. You just got to capitalize on your opportunities whenever it's called. But, you know, I feel like young kids these days, they all want to be in that five receiver offense, getting a lot of balls, getting 100 balls. But, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, if you got a great offensive line, great running backs, man, you get a lot of one-on-one out there. So I think if any receiver you want to come to Georgia, it's a great opportunity.
So I hope that guys like Jonathan Mingo will listen to that carefully. And you know, I think Georgia fans will have an interesting discussion when they think about this position and those remaining roster spots for 2019, scholarship spots for the 2019 class, overall, you know, ways of getting to the 85 in general. Which kind of wide receiver addition do UGA fans favor? Is it a guy like Cage or is it a guy like Mingo? I think that's a pretty interesting conversation we had. But that's not the only piece of interesting recruiting news over the weekend, too, that I want to make sure we hit here on Dog Nation Daily off the top. First of all, as we discussed a little bit last week, Nick Cross did choose to give his final official visit to Penn State. In fact, on Instagram, he showed some evidence of that being in Happy Valley. But before he goes out there, apparently, there you go on video right now. You see the photo of him in Happy Valley in the Beaver Stadium in the background. He's wearing the full white Penn State uniform. I gotta say, that does not really work for me in terms of, hey, get excited about coming here and wearing this uniform. Something about that bland white uniform, it almost seems like the uniform you'd wear in a practice situation more so, or like a workout more so than an actual big time college football uniform. But Cross does take the official visit to Penn State. But before that, apparently, according to Cross's own Instagram, and as had been reported by Rivals.com last week, Cross was taking apparently an unofficial visit to UGA on his Instagram account. Now that's a uniform. That's a uniform that gets you excited right there. Nick Cross stopping by UGA before heading to Happy Valley in time to get a couple pictures there and get focused in on what Georgia might want to tell him on an unofficial basis before he takes the official visit to Penn State. So does that keep George in play for Cross, who's committed to Florida State and obviously choosing to give the final official visit weekend to Penn State? Jeff Sintel said some interesting things about that as of late. Our recruiting insider, DogNation.com. I'll invite you to make sure you read everything that Jeff writes over the next couple of days as Georgia closes out this 2019 class. But as a reminder, when we first found out that Cross would be taking the official visit to Penn State, which he did do over the weekend, Jeff kind of pumped the brakes on us a little bit, saying, hey, don't be so quick to assume that that eliminates Georgia just because of that official visit situation. What Jeff said then seems more prophetic now, given the fact that Cross did indeed take apparently his unofficial visit to Georgia this weekend. But as a reminder, a little more context on Cross, here's what Jeff said on this in the past.
Nick Cross has been to Georgia. He's taken some unofficials to Georgia. He's been there for a game day. I think in his heart of hearts, when the in-home visits, and if he truly wants to go to Georgia, I think he's seen enough there to pull the trigger on Georgia. To me, this is just an example of there are other schools to think about here aside from Georgia.
So I think that's really interesting from Jeff. He says, if Cross wants to go to Georgia, he's seen enough and he's gotten enough info from UGA, and the additional unofficial visit gives him even more to think about in that regard. But Jeff also gives us a pretty stern reminder at the end that this is not just Georgia versus Penn State. You've still got to think about the school that he's committed to, Florida State. You've still got to think about them potentially being involved in all of this. So a lot to think about with this four-star defensive back, Nick Cross, a name we've talked about a lot by now over the last couple of weeks. And at the very least, it's got to be at least somewhat optimistic that Georgia got a chance to bend his ear one more time before the weekend and before he goes to Happy Valley. Georgia did indeed get its shot on that. One more thing with the recruiting weekend I want to make sure you're aware of, though, off the top of our program, was also something that Jeff Sintel wrote about on Friday. Mark Anthony Richards, that top 100 athlete, probably he wants to be considered a running back, maybe also a bit of a slot receiver, a kind of guy that Georgia could potentially use a lot of different ways. Jeff Sintel reported at DogNation.com over the weekend that Georgia used its final got the final in-home visit with Mark Anthony Richards itself just a couple of days ago. So Georgia had a chance to entertain Richards in his own home and make another pitch to him as Richards goes into his final recruiting thoughts here, getting ready to make a decision almost any time now. The Richards decision could come, considering between Florida and Auburn, I guess Miami in the mix there too, Georgia in the mix there as well. Obviously, Mark Anthony Richards is still pretty torn on his decision. Let me give you an example of that, something that Mar, as some of the Dog Nation forum readers have called him, what Mark Anthony Richards said to DogNation.com about this. He says, I've just got to take my time really seriously, consider all these schools and just pray about it. That's really all I can do. Wherever I go, I know it's going to be a great decision because I know all five of my schools are great schools, both athletically and academically, so I am good. So he says, I'm going to make a good decision wherever I go, But obviously, he's weighing all this to make the best decision. When you think about what Mark Anthony Richards says there to Jeff Sintel, it makes some of the things that he said in the past about Georgia all the more interesting. This is a guy that's really gotten some level of comfort about the way that he thinks Georgia would use him if he were to join Georgia's 2019 class. In fact, that's one of the things that he wanted to hear most from Georgia. Would they make him a running back? Do they have big plans for him? Here is some of what he's told Jeff Sintel on that very point in the past.
How do you feel coming out of the Georgia visit?
I feel pretty good. It was my second time up there. No, I really like the plan that they have for me. So,
what is that plan?
Strictly running back. You know, they understand that I'm a running back at heart. And I know that they compare my game to, like, Alvin Kamara. They're going to coach Mark. That's somebody he used to coach back when he was at Bama. So yeah, and that's kind of a role that I guess I can see myself playing.
So I think that's really interesting that he likes the idea of being strictly a running back, likes the idea of how George would use him, and he went into a little bit more detail with Jeff about exactly what those plans would look like. Here's more from Mark Anthony Richards from a conversation in the past.
What'd you like best about Georgia coming out of that visit?
Really just, you know, spending time with the coaches. They weren't really in it at the beginning, you know, due to, like, I thought they were going to recruit me as a receiver. But once Coach Hankton visited, you know, I told him I said I'm a running back. Yeah, you know, that's just what I am. And then from that day on forth, it kind of changed.
So there you hear from Mark Anthony Richards. Now, I still have a hard time imagining how he would overall fit into a Georgia plans where it looks like you've got a guy in James Cook on the roster that already does a lot of the things that Mark Anthony Richards could do well at the college level. But Georgia obviously wants the best class it can get, the best players that it can get, best prospects. And certainly when you look at the overall rankings and ratings for Mark Anthony Richards, he certainly rates pretty high, so we'll see how that fits in. The bottom line is Georgia's got a limited number of scholarships it can still add in the 2019 cycle and a few big names it's chasing down. Kirby's told us he wants defensive backs. He'd like to have a wide receiver. And in the final stages of this 2019 class, Georgia's going to have its chance to get maybe a couple of the names that I just mentioned. Kyra Lam still floating out there. Buckle your seatbelts because it could be a wild ride between now and Wednesday. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you. Thank you for being with us live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev. And we're available as a podcast wherever you find podcasts, including the world-famous DogNation.com, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices. We're just really glad to have you with us. Obviously, we will talk a lot about everything that's been going on with UGA. We'll get Chip Towers, our buddy, coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, as I promised, I did want to get into some of the Super Bowl stuff from last night. I want to do that as a part of Around the Doghouse here presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And there were really two questions that I was left with coming off last night's Super Bowl. When you look at one of the recipes for success for New England, and I think this ends up being a real relevant topic for UGA, look no further than David Boss Andrews, who is the Georgia alumnus now playing in New England. He's a captain there, undrafted free agent, one of the captains of the team there in New England, one of the anchors of that offensive line. And here is a guy that went from being very lightly recruited out of high school to a three-year starter at Georgia, then went from being an undrafted free agent out of UGA to now being one of the pillars of the New England Patriots offensive line. So here are the two questions that I think would be relevant for Georgia fan to deal with right now. How do you identify in a high school player now what Andrews had then? Or maybe a better question is, how do you coach that into someone? You know, a very popular phrase that exists right now is the notion of grit. The notion of wanting to fight and scratch and claw and get everything that you can. Maybe overcoming adversity, overcoming odds. Those of us who are parents want that for our children. But sometimes knowing how to instill that into your children is not easy to do. And sometimes as a coach looking to find players who are going to be the next version of David Boss Andrews, it's not easy to identify those guys at the high school level. Sure, you can find the guys who are bigger and stronger, and you can use measurements to determine the physical attributes. But those intangible attributes, and it's not just Andrews that has these. I think to a certain extent, Sonny Michel has these too. Now, Michel was always an elite recruit and always kind of a superstar football player. But he's also kind of got that big game quotient. This is a guy who seems to rise his level of play to the highest level, the bigger the moment is. New England for the NFL just seems to be really good at identifying those kinds of guys. It can pull a David Andrews out of the, you know, the ranks of undrafted free agents. It can sift through the first round and find a guy like Michelle who's going to thrive in the big moment. They just seem to be really good at that. And I don't really care about the Patriots for the most part. I don't really care how they do that. But I would love to also find a way to see Georgia be able to do that too. I'd love to also find a way for Georgia to, as it populates its roster with as many five stars as it can, be good at that intangible part of it as well, to say, here's the guy that really wants to play football, that really loves the game, that really wants to give it his all and his best every single time he goes out there. We actually had a chance to talk to David Boss Andrews about that when we were at last Monday at the Super Bowl opening night. Had a chance to discuss him about the path that he took to get to the New England Patriots, and I asked him flat out, hey, we're in a day and age now where most of the guys that play in your spot, offensive line at the University of Georgia, in these days and age, these are five-star players. These are very high four-star players. That's not what you were. Does that make you a different kind of football player? And I thought that Andrews gave a really interesting answer to that question. Here's what he said about that.
I don't think it makes me any different football player. I've just carried this, been the same David I've been my whole life, tried to play with the same way I played when I was 6 years old. I think the love for the game, the passion for the game, you know, the love for your teammates, that stuff's what carries you and what makes you a good teammate and good football player.
I think it'd be great to hear from some coaches. You know, Andrews uses that phrase, love for the game, passion for the game. Can you really identify that? Is that the kind of thing when you go to a camp? Is it the kind of thing when you go to a high school football game on a Friday night? Can you really see the difference between guys who have that love and passion for the game and guys that don't? Obviously, in the case of David Andrews, that attitude has seemingly served him well, to the point where now he is a starter for the New England Patriots, overcoming all the odds to be where he is. And if you're Georgia, you'd love to be able to find the next generation of that, or be able to identify guys who have that demeanor. It seems to be a pretty valuable commodity, and New England seems to be pretty good at finding it. It's Around the Doghouse, here presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. You know, they can help you equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. They're family-owned and operated, but they also have the strength of being a national company, so you really get the best of both worlds. You get the national strength, but you also get that locally-owned branch right here in Georgia that gives you the service that you really need. And they also offer the best lifetime warranty and top-of-the-line equipment and unparalleled expertise. They have a great offer for you right now as well. You can get 40% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 60 months. That offer is about to go away. It's only valid through February 7th, so take advantage of this right now. A couple different ways for you to do that. You can find them online at PellaSoutheast.us. That's PellaSoutheast.us, or give them a call at their Dunwoody showroom, which is 404-445-2979. 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia. It's viewed to be the best. And that was not just a good weekend for Georgia in terms of guys contributing the Super Bowl. There's also a former dog that went into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We'll talk about that later on the program. For now, though, here on Dog Nation Daily, let's get ready to, as we do every Monday, welcome in our buddy Chip Towers right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Chip Towers here on this Monday here around Dog Nation. And obviously, Chip, there was a lot last night with the Georgia Bulldogs factoring into the story with the Super Bowl, as we, you know, talked about for the last few days. Kind of amazing to see so many former dogs there in the center stage. And once again, it's New England who emerges as victorious. And listen, I'm no Patriots fan, Chip, but I have to admit I did enjoy seeing Sony Michel be as involved in this one as he was last night, scoring the game's only touchdown. And I briefly touched on this a moment ago. This is certainly a young man who seems to have, you know, whatever that sort of big game gene is. I don't buy into the notion of being clutch all that much. I think that's an overused phrase in sports. But he showed it at Georgia in the Rose Bowl. He took his game to another level in the rookie season in the NFL. I want to say he had 6 touchdowns in postseason play this year, including a touchdown last night. There is something about big games that are certainly not too big for Sony Michel, and it's kind of cool seeing him carry that legacy with him on into the NFL after he showed that off also at the University of Georgia, too.
Well, and he's been consistent about it, too, Brandon. I mean, when I think about Sony, I always think about the first stories I heard about him when he was just a freshman at Georgia from John Theus, who had gone against him in high school, and Sony, I think, was 4 years behind him or whatever, and he was a ninth grader come out of an American heritage and how he was just an unbelievable player even then. So he's been doing it for a long, long time. You know, everywhere he's been, American heritage was a powerhouse program. Obviously, Georgia was a powerhouse program, and the Patriots, what a dynasty they've become. I'm probably like everybody else. I'm like, I'd like to see somebody besides the Patriots and Alabama hoisting these trophies. But, hey, you got to be happy for David Boss Andrews and Sony Michel and Isaiah Wynn as well. And, the biggest thing about Sony, he just, in those moments, he just doesn't screw up, you know. I mean, it's easy to trip or drop the ball or something when in those big moments, and he just doesn't let it happen. 18 carries, 94 yards, a touchdown, and really outshined Gurley on this particular night, unfortunately. But good for the Patriots and good for Sony Michel.
And as I said before, I do believe the notion of being clutch is really overrated. It's the kind of thing those of us who do sports media for a living have a tendency to myth make about. But I do think there are players who don't like big moments as much. They'd rather run for 300 yards against Vanderbilt and score 5 touchdowns against the Commodores than be on that stage against the LA Rams and the biggest overall stage that football offers, because the nerves and the anxiety just diminish performance. Sony Michel does not seem to be one of those guys. He's never been, from my perspective, and Chip, you've obviously been around him for a long time, he's never been all that impressed with himself. He's never been all that impressed with what's happening around him. I had a chance to talk to him a little bit on Monday. He was kind of just taking it all in the way that he does everything else. And I do think he has a casual demeanor. I think that casual demeanor, if I had to guess, probably helps him in moments like last night, where you got 100 million people watching on television. But for him, it's not that much different than it was at American Heritage back in Plantation, Florida.
Yeah, I think he does. He's actually very similar to Nick Chubb in that regard, and they're different in a lot of ways, but I think they both kind of influenced each other over the years, and they've got that kind of quiet confidence and, very intentional about not, letting any situation overwhelm them. And, I loved his quote afterward. He says, "Be where your feet are, and right now I'm at the Super Bowl." He said a wise man once told him that. That wise man was Kirby Smart. That was one of his go-to phrases: "Be where your feet are, and don't be kind of overwhelmed by the situation, or thinking ahead, or looking behind. Just be where you are right in that moment." And that's where he was. And beautiful, beautiful moment down there on the field with a Haitian flag wrapped around his shoulders, with his mom just beaming right there behind him, and his dad there on the field tweeted out, "God is good." I mean, that's what you want to see. And what a proud, proud week, for the University of Georgia, between, everything you got from Gurley and Michelle and Andrews and Ramique Wilson and Isaiah Wynn in the Super Bowl. And then, Champ Bailey get selected for a Hall of Fame in induction. I got to say, Brandon, of all the athletes I've covered, and I've covered some great ones, Todd Gurley, one of the best, running backs I ever personally got to witness on a day-to-day basis. Champ Bailey, just the best athlete I ever watched. I didn't get to see Scott Warner every day, and certainly Charlie Trippi and Jake Scott and some guys like that. But, man, Champ Bailey, you'd see him run 111 plays or whatever it was, in a game here and a game there. He gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, or will be inducted. Yeah, just a great weekend for the University of Georgia's brand. I don't know what kind of value they got out of it, but I think it was significant.
Yeah, I want to talk to you more about Bailey in a moment, because I think there are some really cool moments from his career that almost get lost to time a bit at the University of Georgia, and I want to address some of that with you in a minute. But you mentioned David Boss Andrews. I don't want to move off the Patriots before we talk a little bit more about him. And, Chip, one of the things I said before you joined us is, if I'm Georgia or just any football coach, I'm fascinated by stories like Andrews. And he's not the only guy that does what he does to go on to have NFL success. But it almost becomes this curiosity of, can you identify or can you train up someone to overcome their predictions the way that Andrews has? This is a guy that didn't have a ton of offers. This was not the 4- and 5-star offensive lineman that Georgia's recruiting now, and yet he became an invaluable member of the line as a three-year starter at UGA. Now he's the captain of the New England Patriots. I'd love to think that one day there'll be some sort of football science, the way that everything else seems to grow and be developed, where coaches can kind of look across the plane of high school football and say, as Andrew said with his own words a moment ago, I love the game, I've got a passion for the game. If you can ever find a way to measure that, if you can ever find a way to really identify that, take what has up until now been intangible and turn it into more of a tangible thing, Chip, that's a billion-dollar idea, because that's the thing that all coaches are looking for and hoping to develop, but not everybody has that equally, and Andrew seems to have a lot more than most, does he not?
Yeah, he does, and, you know, I think this is part of the formula to the Patriots' success of Bill Belichick. I mean, you know, if you read the stories about David Andrews and Bill Belichick's interactions with him prior to that draft, you know, he told him flat out, you're not going to be drafted. You know, we're not going to draft you. But we like, you know, what we see from you. And you know, that's just fascinating to me. And I got to be honest with you, I doubted David Andrews at every step. I mean, I remember when Georgia signed him out of the Wesleyan school, you know, and I'm like, ah, look, private school over there in Gwinnett County, you know, and who is this guy? And, you know what, he every bit of 6'2", maybe, you know, in an age when Georgia was playing 350-pound linemen, and granted, centers tend to be a little bit smaller.
Sure.
But I just never foresaw the success that he's had. But whatever it is, he's got that it factor. I mean, the guy knows football. He's been doing it since a rec league over there in Gwinnett County. There are great stories. Friends of mine, actually, a buddy of mine, Rusty Bennett, had the pleasure of coaching him in youth ball, and then told me back then, said, he's just a player. You know, there's just no way to really describe it. He knows the game. He loves the game. He's smart about it, and he's really quick. Now, he doesn't get, you know, he's twitch quick, which is something you got to have as a center. But, you know, recognition, quickness, and just the love of the game. And that's what David Andrews has. And right now he's got 2 rings, played 3 Super Bowls. That's just an incredible story. I can't wait to read his book when he writes it one day and find out what the secret sauce is to that kid.
This is not all that important, but it is kind of interesting to me that so much of the Todd Gurley story with the Rams last night reminds me so much of some of the DeAndre Swift stuff earlier in the season at UGA. He's not playing a ton. Gurley's not. He's not a big part of the Rams offense really in the Super Bowl or the NFC Championship game. And there's this kind of shrugging answer of, well, why not? Well, you know, he says he's not hurt. It really reminds me a lot of the curiosities about the way that Swift was lightly used earlier in the season for UGA. What did you make of Gurley not being that big a part of this thing again last night after being really overshadowed in the NFC Championship game too?
Well, I still got to think he's got to be hurt. I mean, I don't care what he says or anybody else says. I think we all saw what Todd Gurley looked like all year. And the little bit that I saw of him, you know, in the Super Bowl and in the NFC Championship game, he looked like the regular Todd Gurley. I mean, you know, the one carry he had there, bursting for, you know, 8-9 yards, I don't know, a pretty good gain, 2 first down runs. I saw him, you know, he looked like the same burst, the same cut, the same vision. But, you know, you got to remember at the tail end of that DeAndre Swift story was a double groin surgery, right? And so, I mean, I think these guys nowadays, you know, their careers are so precarious, you know, running backs in particular. I think they're very, very careful about protecting, you know, their personal rights when it comes to injury and that kind of thing. And I think he's just kind of keeping that on the down low. I mean, that's the only thing I can think, because, you know, the Todd Gurley I watched all season is not the guy I saw in the postseason. And, certainly the Rams wanted that. They needed that, and they weren't able to get it. But then, you know, the flip side of that, they weren't getting much on offense, period. You know, I mean, give the Patriots credit. They did a great job of defending them, you know, their offense in every way, shape, and form. And it was a struggle to get anything done, not just Todd Gurley.
Yeah, you're right about that. You mentioned Champ Bailey, and obviously you have great memories or vivid memories of his career at Georgia. And, Chip, I think one of the things that a lot of our younger listeners and viewers and your younger readers might not realize is how good of a wide receiver Champ Bailey was at Georgia. Obviously a terrific defensive back. He'll go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame as one of the best defensive backs in the modern era, a guy who was just a terrific ball hawk out there. But you go back and look at those late 90s Georgia teams that he played on, he was really lethal as a wide receiver coming across that, bubble screen, whatever you want to call that, that move that Bailey used a lot. He was a real load to deal with offensively. When I think back on Bailey and his Georgia career, I almost think back on him more as an offensive player than I do defensive player, even though he's an all-time great defensive back. He was just so difficult to tackle when he came across on one of those, receiver patterns, caught the football, go take it to the end zone. He was really good in that spot.
Well, he was, and I give Jim Donnan a lot of credit for, utilizing Champ Bailey the way he did. That tunnel screen, bubble screen, whatever you want to call it. I've never seen anybody run that play better than he did. And, really, it was just sheer speed. He had unbelievable speed, but he had great ball skills as well as his career interception totals would tell you. And there was some discussion. I remember I went down to Folkston and attended his draft party when he was, picked, I think it was the seventh pick or fifth pick of that draft. That was a fun deal, a really crazy story that I'll tell you sometime off the air about flying down there in a single prop plane. But that's a whole other story. But, there was some talk, about that. Does he play on offense in the NFL? But obviously his skills were just so unbelievable as a defensive back and a cornerback, and that's where he concentrated in the NFL. And 11 Pro Bowls later, I think that was obviously the right call. But, also Champ, he just stayed as humble as you possibly could, and kind of, it was until they recounted all of his accomplishments in the NFL that, you kind of forget. It's like, good Lord, look at the production that guy had for such a long time at that position. Now, you don't see quarterbacks hanging around for double-figure years usually in the NFL, and he was an unbelievable player. He's been a good Bulldog, and, he talked about it being Bulldog country when he got that mention. I thought that was great. Champ's a great guy and another great representative of the University of Georgia.
I was going to try to avoid asking you about this for like the fifth week in a row, but I feel like I now have to the more I think about it. On Wednesday, it's obviously National Signing Day. Kirby Smart will almost for sure address the players that Georgia adds and the overall mixture of how they fit into the class together. Do you expect on Wednesday Kirby to make the defensive coordinator situation official? It would seem really weird if he does it on Wednesday when he's likely to address the media. Does this long statewide debate of how this is going to play out and who it's going to be in the role of defensive coordinator, does this all come to an end on Wednesday?
God, I hope so. I don't know. I kind of doubt it a little bit. I would anticipate like Friday or something, after all the National Signing Day and the residual, because you never know how all that stuff's going to come down. On Wednesday, Georgia has somebody, and you have gone over it in great detail with Jeff Sintel. This is kind of one of the most intriguing national signing days I've ever seen, especially when you're talking about possibly two or three spots. I don't know. Maybe there's some way that Georgia can finagle more in that. But there's so much intrigue about who are they going to actually get out of this class? So it's kind of fascinating, and so you never know where that's going to go. On Wednesday, he may use that platform to sort of solidify the entire staff, which now at this point includes 10 assistant coaches, and not anticipating any other trouble. But he also may separate the two. But I anticipate something this week. I think at this point, Kirby seems to me he's very much about the process. As we all know, he's very much segmental. And this would kind of be closing the door on recruiting. Closing the door on staff, rebuilding, or what have you, and then getting ready and turning attention to preparation for spring practice. So I would imagine we'll have some announcements as to how everything's going to break down. I got a story on Dog Nation right now on Dan Lanning. I, one way or another, I'm confident that Dan Lanning is going to be part of this equation. Whether Glenn Schumann, Charlton Warren, somebody else is also part of the equation, we'll find out. But, you know, I dug a little deeper and tried to find out a little bit more about Dan Lanning. He's got a fascinating story about how he gets to the University of Georgia from Little William Jewell College in Liberty, Missouri. So that's a good read there, and you can learn a little bit more about him. But, you know, when Kirby died, I think it'll be this week. I certainly hope so.
We will look forward to reading that from you at DogNation.com to find out a little bit more about Lanning, who's obviously expected to potentially be a big part of all of this. So that'll be a fascinating read at DogNation.com. Chip, thanks for your time here today on Dog Nation Daily. As I said, we will look forward to reading you on the website and talking to you back here on the program again very soon, too.
All right. See you next time.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I look forward to that from Chip at Dog Nation on Lanning. I've really grown to like Lanning as a coach. I think one of the things that Kirby Smart's been really good at is his ability to go out and find these young coaches and develop them. Or I don't even know if it's develop is the right way to say it. Just identify guys who are going to fit into his plans and fit into the mode that Georgia asks for its coaches to be in. You know, you'll make the comparison to the situation New England Patriots. It's been talked about over and over again that not everyone is a fit to play and coach with Bill Belichick. It is a grind. It is tough. It's not easy. I think a college version of that is a bit like what Kirby Smart does at the University of Georgia. And in this day and age now where there are a lot of coaches trying to do things in a similar fashion to Smart, the number of assistant coaches who can fit in that, thrive in that role, it's just not going to be a huge number. That's why you see so many of these assistants being passed around back and forth by the same SEC teams. It's kind of a finite resource. There aren't enough to go around. And so when Kirby Smart can go out and pluck a Dan Lanning and bring him in and bring him up through the ranks, do the same thing with a Glenn Schumann. I think you're seeing the same thing with Trey Scott a bit right now, too. When Kirby's good at that, I think it benefits Georgia overall because you can't always go out and pluck a big ticket, big name, assistant coach flip the way that Charlton Warren turned out to be when he left Florida and come from Georgia. That excites me, that excites fans, but the overall operation of a program requires more than just doing that because those kinds of coaches aren't always out there and available for you. I believe that Georgia's probably found a bit of a diamond in the rough with Lanning, and I look forward to reading more from Chip about Lanning at DogNation.com. By the way, before we do our SEC through, let me remind you, and guys, you got to make sure you listen to this and pay close attention. Valentine's Day is coming up, and Kroger's got you taken care of on that. You can stop by your local Kroger from February 13th and the 14th, that's Valentine's Day, from noon to 6 p.m. for a chocolate dipping station. How about this? What a great date. Go to Kroger for the chocolate dipping station, and while you're there, you can also shop for everything you might need for your Valentine's Day. It's sweets, cards, flowers, everything in between. So you can do a lot of that kind of stuff. Get some strawberries dipped, whatever you need. I would imagine there's probably no shortage of things that would taste good dipped in chocolate. So do that. Take care of yourself and the significant other in your life. They're your local Kroger. It's a really nice thing they're doing. All right, SEC through time. And here's the scenario with the calendar. Super Bowl is now over. That means we won't really have any kind of live football, no college, no pro, for quite some time. We got National Signing Day on Wednesday. Then after that, we really turn our attention to the start of spring practice. Now, the great news is that spring practice, you don't have to wait too long for that. That'll just be a few weeks down the road. And this is not just interesting from the standpoint of what Georgia's going to do in spring practice, but what some of Georgia's biggest rivals are going to do. We talked last week in the program about ESPN. It's way too early top 25. It's reasons for optimism for all those. For Georgia, we addressed what they were saying with the Georgia defense. We debated last week about, you know, is this a Georgia defense ready to take that next step towards really being a great unit, really being, you know, more than just a good unit, but a impactful game-changing, more sacks, more tackles for loss, and obviously ESPN weighed in on that. But as a part of our SEC through today, I also wanted to make sure we took some time to address some of the other things that ESPN said about some of Georgia's rivals. In the SEC, teams also ranked in ESPN's way too early top 25, the reasons for optimism for these teams, and how that might relate to Georgia in games that we know are going to be played or in games that could be played. First of all, starting with Alabama, it's probably not a huge surprise to hear the offense being mentioned. Tua Tagovailoa returns. Now, the opinion of Tua is seemingly a little different at the end of the year than it was before the SEC championship, but this is still a very dangerous Alabama offense. That's true even without Mike Locksley and Dan Enos. Enos is at Miami now. Locksley's the head coach of Maryland. Steve Sarkisian's expected to be the offensive coordinator at Alabama. the overall results, I'm assuming for the Crimson Tide, aren't going to be all that different. Here's the one thing I would say, though, from a optimistic standpoint from Georgia. When you look at the way that Georgia defended Tua before Tua left that game with an injury, and it's so easy to forget this, in that SEC championship, DeAndre Walker also leaves that game with an injury, and he's been dealing with that ever since then, so much so that he's recently decided to have some surgery. When you think about that, you think about Georgia that had a winning game plan against Tagovailoa a year ago, or not even a year ago, it's last season, but it was in December, it's not all that long ago. So when you think about the Alabama offense coming back in a big way for 2019, we also know that Georgia's had a winning game plan against Tagovailoa. Yes, Georgia didn't finish the drill that day. That's water under the bridge now. But that is at least something to consider. ESPN also mentions the return of Joe Burrow as quarterback for LSU. I think this is one of the real interesting storylines in the SEC this season. As I've said before, I have been proven somewhat wrong on Ed Orgeron. He's building a better program right now at LSU than I would have anticipated him building. I'm higher on LSU going into the 2019 season than I would have been about this program going into the 2018 season. I think returning Burrow at quarterback, although I don't believe he's a great signal caller, but returning Burrow at quarterback, I think makes LSU a dangerous team. I've said I believe that both these freshman running backs, John Emery Jr. and Ty Davis, are part of the offense this season. LSU's already deep at receiver. This is as much of a challenge as Alabama's had in the SEC West in quite some time. I firmly believe that LSU is a legit, you know, top 10 type team next season. I think the Texas A&M can be very much the same way, and I think this could make, despite the fact that Alabama's going to be a huge favorite and likely still going to win the division, they could be challenged within the division far more than they've been in quite some time. A couple other stories to mention. You know, you got Kelly Bryant coming back to Missouri. ESPN wrote about that. On Friday, we dealt with the controversy of the bowl ban that Missouri's facing this season. The truth is, I don't think many players are going to leave Missouri because I think there's a chance that, you know, Missouri's going to appeal this. And by appealing that, they postpone whatever punishment might eventually come. Plus, there's just a really good chance, based on the facts and the ground, that Missouri's punishment ends up being lessened. I don't know enough about the NCAA process to know that. But I do know that Bryant, the former Clemson quarterback coming to Missouri, does make Missouri, if not a threat to win the East, a dangerous opponent on a single-game basis. Missouri coming to Athens this year, that's one of those games, much like in Columbia a year ago. Georgia knew it was in that game against Missouri, and I think they are good enough again this season to challenge on an individual game basis almost anyone. Do I expect them to beat Georgia? No, I don't. But with Kelly Bryant at quarterback, Derek Dooley at offensive coordinator, is that a competent team? Yeah, even with the NCAA sanctions hanging over its head, I believe that it kind of is. And then one more team to mention from the ESPN way too early top 25 look. They mentioned the Auburn defense. And I don't think you can put into words how much of a value it was for Auburn to get the good news from Derrick Brown, coming back for his final season, not going to the NFL when I think almost everyone assumed that he would, likely could have been a first-round draft pick. As an anchor to that defense, Derrick Brown as a defensive lineman for the Tigers next season, I think that ensures the very least that the expectation is that Auburn should be a top 25 team next season. And this is one of those weird years in which they get to host both Georgia and Alabama. In 2017, we knew what a house of horrors that was for UGA. When you start thinking about those most important, most difficult games for Georgia next season, the 2019 season, I think you have to really think pretty closely about that trip to Auburn as a proving ground for Jake Fromm. Fromm struggled against LSU on the road in 2018, struggled against Auburn on the road in 2017. The road game in 2019 that's going to prove how much Jake Fromm has grown in that regard is likely going to be that game against Auburn. And Derrick Brown's return makes that Auburn defense a very formidable foe for Georgia on that particular Saturday. So once signing day is done, we'll start turning our attention to the 2019 season in earnest. And there are some really interesting storylines already developing around the SEC, and I appreciate ESPN doing its part to chronicle some of those. We'll make that your SEC through. And I wanted to turn our attention a little bit more fully here to Champ Bailey, who I was really proud to see enshrined, or the announcement that he's going to be enshrined to the Pro Football Hall of Fame over the weekend. This is obviously deserving for one of the great modern-day defensive backs. A little bit different, I think, than a Deion Sanders, who, you know, Sanders was one of those guys that his greatness as a defensive back was almost signified by the fact that people didn't throw his way very much. But Bailey seemed to be, in my mind, a much more impactful player on a game-to-game basis. This is a guy that got interceptions. This is a guy that really defended the ball incredibly well. And as we talked about with Chip Towers, when he was at Georgia, he was also a terrific wide receiver, too. He was used in some very creative ways by Jim Donnan. I know that Bailey's given some credit to Donnan for his college career. Donnan was really interesting how he used Bailey. And it was always really fun to watch, and obviously I've got great memories of that now that he goes in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I'm thinking back to a couple of months ago when Bailey was with us on this program, and I thought it was really appropriate today, given the fact that we talk about this every single day, to remind folks about what the latest Pro Football Hall of Famer has said about Georgia and its rivalry with the Florida Gators. I do love this from Bailey so much. That was on the program with us. He looked back on a great memory of his being a part of a Florida team or a Georgia team in 1997 that upset Florida, that got that win. But listen to the end here with Bailey, making what I think is an irrefutable point. Georgia's biggest rivalry is with Florida. Bailey was really glad to go out and get a victory against the Gators in 1997. So here is the newest Pro Football Hall of Famer with some pretty important words for Georgia, looking back on a great win for himself against Florida and a reminder of how all Dog fans should view that rivalry. Take a listen to this.
There was a streak going of losing to them for several years. And, you know, to be able to break that streak, it was very meaningful. It was also meaningful in a way, you know, my brother was on the field with me, Ron, you know, and having all those great players, Hines Ward, Robert Edwards, Mike Bobo, and Kirby Smart as well. I mean, it was a great experience because it's hard to beat these guys. It was. But now I think we're in a different position, but people always have to understand, like, this is the biggest rivalry in college sports.
Listen, how much do you love that from Champ Bailey there when he was on Dog Nation Daily not too long ago? First of all, there are a couple things I like about that. He says, you know, it's hard to beat Florida. Then he pumps the brakes and says, well, it was hard to beat Florida. Not as hard for this Georgia team as of late, but certainly Bailey remembers that era in which Florida really meant something, and he was able to go out and get that win in 1997. And he also reminds us that Georgia-Florida, in his mind, is the biggest rivalry in all of college football. It's one of the things we try to hammer home on Dog Nation Daily each and every day, that good Georgia fans ought to be Gator haters, and that's why we celebrate the fact that it's been 828 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. Not quite as hard to beat Florida anymore, it would seem, and Georgia's been doing a lot of that as of late. We appreciate Champ Bailey being on Dog Nation Daily not too long ago to celebrate that very fact. So if you're ever wondering how you should rank the rivalries that Georgia has, a Pro Football Hall of Famer just told you ought to value that Georgia-Florida rivalry, and that's plenty good enough for me. Congratulations to Champ Bailey. Congratulations to Sony and Boss Andrews. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily and on video.